breaks. He wants to go long, nothing there. And he finally goes long, and there's a man wide open. And that is Antonio. He's got it. 25-20, marker down, 15-10. Cuts inside for the Steelers' touchdown.
That is the legendary Bill Hillgrove, voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers. An Antonio Brown touchdown. No track, wall, lickety-split.
Disappointing.
Oh, mama.
Oh, mama.
None of that, but Antonio Brown very much in the news, and ran across this story. There looks to be a sports book, a Vegas sports book, that has installed the Arizona Cardinals as the team with the best betting odds to get Antonio Brown moving forward. Reaction to that, Luke?
That's not what we've been hearing. I mean, San Francisco has seemed like the front runner, haven't they? Even if there's no real basis to it,
it seems that way.
My first
that's
reaction,
just because of the Jerry Rice thing, though.
Yeah, but Antonio Brown has made it kind of clear. I mean, he's talking to George Kittle. It seems like every other day on Twitter about it too. It's my initial reaction when I heard that was Steve Keim's words that they're going to be as aggressive as possible this summer or this offseason. That's the, like the first thing I heard when I read that headline.
Yeah, here are the odds from sportsbetting.ag. Cardinals plus 450, Steelers plus 500.
Which I don't get.
49ers, Dolphins plus 550, Packers plus 700, Colts plus 700, then Raiders, Jets, Redskins, Browns, and then you get teams that don't have great chances.
I think you could pull some of those teams, though. I know Bill Barnwell, when he was on yesterday, said he still thinks he'll end up back with the Steelers. Do you see that being a possibility? I really don't at this point.
Ed Bouchette covers the Steelers, mm-hmm. was on with Burns and Gambo and said that, explained why Brown can't come back to the Steelers.
Well, the top reason is he abandoned them before the last game of the season, which could have been very critical to their chances of making the playoffs. And there's just been so much building up. It's like then one game where you keep piling blocks on and blocks
Jenga.
On and blocks on until,
it's,
yeah, until
Jenga,
finally
yeah.
they topple over. And I think that's where the Steelers are right now.
Here was another one from Ed Bouchette yesterday with Burns and Gambo. And I've had the discussions. I made the point, Luke, that I don't have faith that he can renovate his image. He's a diva. He's a great player. He's a diva. He's a difficult teammate. You would agree?
Yeah, he's become one. I don't think he's always been one.
No, I don't think so. I think he has become one, and I think that happens to a lot of players when they reach a certain level of accomplishment and status in a league. But does a change of scenery to Arizona, a team that won three games last year with a first-year head coach and a second-year quarterback moving forward, does that paint the picture for a guy who's going to be all hunky-dory on his situation? I don't know that. I don't have
out of Pittsburgh so bad, though, that some just being out of Pittsburgh will give him a little bit of a boost.
Yeah, I don't feel confident in saying that that would be the case. It might be. I don't feel confident in saying it. Ed Bouchette has got a pretty good beat on things. As Jarrett said, he's covered the Steelers for a long time in Pittsburgh. He says he can straighten himself out with a new team.
Antonio is going to want fervently, and he's been early on, he was a good teammate, and some of the teammates still swear by him, that he's going to fervently want to prove the Steelers wrong, prove that he is a great receiver no matter who the quarterback is. And I think that he will knuckle down and try his best to be a good citizen, a good teammate, a good player for that team.
See, I think there is something to that. I'm glad he just verbalized it. I think there's something to wanting to prove the Steelers wrong. Whether that's 100% what the story is or not, in Antonio Brown's mind, I think wherever he ends up, he's going to go. I think you're at least going to get that first year hardworking all in on Antonio Brown, which is probably the best receiver in the NFL, if it's not maybe Julio Jones.
I would be willing to actually almost agree with that. Year one, I don't think he's a problem from minute one with any new team.
Yeah.
But I think he goes back to his old ways as soon as something resembling adversity comes up for him personally or team-wise.
See, a buddy of mine that's a really good Cardinals fan brought this point up. If you go out there and get Antonio Brown, then you know what you have in Josh Rosen. You know what I mean? Like, you'll find out this year. We won't sit here and play this game 12 months from now. Like, well,
more so.
He had a little bit around him, but we can't tell. First year, Cliff Kingsbury. Like, if you bring in Antonio Brown and cater the offense to being a passing offense, and you give him Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, a second-year Christian Kirk, David Johnson, and we still have questions about Josh Rosen a year from now, like big questions, then you know you may have an issue.
Yeah, I agree with that. It goes further along the path to proving whether or not Josh Rosen is worth what they've invested in.
This is a question you do have to answer, but quickly, if possible.
Yes, but most of the problem, let's pick this apart. Josh Rosen's issues, some of them were self-inflicted, didn't have a lot of accuracy that we thought he would have. He was not an accurate quarterback last year. Lack of playmakers, we've talked about that. David Johnson didn't seem like the same David Johnson, but to me, most of it was the five guys lining up in front of him.
Yeah.
So if you go, let's say the Cardinals go get Antonio Brown. That's exciting to have Fitzgerald, Brown, and Christian Kirk as your three top receivers. A lot of quarterbacks, a lot of teams would sign up for
Kingsbury
that.
Kingsbury running the offense?
If they have another rash of injuries on the offensive line, all bets are off.
Well, yeah, and you can't really defend against that, right? I mean, even if the salary cap and money weren't an issue and you went out and got the five best offensive linemen in football, you can't control whether or not they get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, there's no foolproof way to pull this off. I'm just looking at this list that you read off of in terms of who they have favored. They have the Cardinals number one. I can't see them going to the Steelers. The 49ers make sense, but like, why would the Dolphins? They're rebuilding. The Packers never put any money into receivers to help Aaron Rodgers. I can't see them being a team that would go after him either. Like the Colts and the 49ers are the teams on this list that make a lot of sense.
But the Dolphins are rebuilding, but the Cardinals aren't?
Yeah, but I don't think the Dolphins have their quarterback yet, do they?
What do you think about Beckham potentially being on the trade block also?
He's a soccer player. I don't like this one bit.
Oh, sorry, Beckham Jr.
Oh. Okay, that's different. I think you'd have to give up more for Beckham. You'd have to give up a lot more for Odell Beckham.
And the salary is more prohibitive, too.
Yeah, he's been a diva his entire career. So that one worries me a little bit more. I don't think if you traded for Odell Beckham Jr., he's going to be like, I'm going to prove the Giants wrong. He's going to be like, I'm going to go talk to this kicking net.
If we talk to it, I'm going to have a relationship with it. if we're going to rank where we feel on the confidence scale of Odell Beckham Jr. not being a diva somewhere else, or Antonio, I feel better about Antonio Brown.
So do I.
I'll say that. More on Josh Rosen. I ran across this from earlier this week on the Big Lead. Jason Lisk wrote this piece about Josh Rosen's value, and he used something called similarity scores. He wrote, Josh Rosen is their guy in Arizona for now. Cardinals have the first overall pick and a new coach in Cliff Kingsbury, and all options are on the table. Arizona has the opportunity to move on if they so choose now or fully commit to Rosen and move forward by using the top pick on an elite player at another position. Rosen had a rough rookie year, 14 interceptions in 13 games, four of which were returned for touchdowns. He averaged a dreadful 5.8 yards per pass attempt. He was sacked on over 10% of his dropbacks. If you go by quarterbacks who threw the league qualifying minimum of 224 passes, it's the second worst season of the last decade, behind only Jamarcus Russell in 2009.
Ugh.
Jared Goff's rookie year threw only 205 passes and just missed the cutoff. Then he goes on to say, how much does that season affect how we should view his prospects going forward? It would be naive to say it is meaningless, but we should put it in perspective. Using the same method as last year when he broke down the rookie class of 2017, I found the 10 most similar rookie seasons since 1978 for rookies who are age 21 or 22, because Rosen just turned 22.
Yeah.
Here's the category he's in.
Okay.
Based on similarity. Blaine Gabbert, Blake Bortles, Kyle Bowler, Steve Fuller.
All right, stop.
Matthew Stafford.
Please.
DeShone Kizer, Sam Darnold, Jared Goff, Ryan Leaf, and Josh Freeman. Darnold, I think, will be good. Stafford has been more than serviceable during his career after he got past the injury bug.
Until last year when he was terrible.
Everybody else on that list is pretty much
Goff.
Well, yeah, and Goff.
Doesn't that sort of speak to the point, though, of put everything you can around him right now? If you can get Antonio Brown for a reasonable price, put the pieces around Josh Rosen right now so you have a definitive answer 12 months from now.
Yeah, when you put it that way, it certainly makes sense to expedite the, we got to find out what we have. And I don't think, not impressed with Josh Rosen last year for a number of reasons, as I've pointed out repeatedly on this show. I don't think we're going to see anything close to what we saw last year.
I still think, and maybe I'm crazy on this one, but I still think he will end up as the second best quarterback out of that rookie class. He's not Baker Mayfield, but I think he'll be better than Darnold as long as they give him a chance to succeed.
Better than Lamar Jackson?
Yeah.
I think he'll be better than, and who am I forgetting? Oh, Josh Allen.
Yeah,
I think Rosen can be better. He was definitely the worst, though, last year.
Yeah, Magic Dry NHRA Arizona Nationals are coming up February 22nd through the 24th at Wild Horse Pass Motorsports Park. We're giving you the chance to win tickets, plus one grand prize winner will receive a one-of-a-kind Nitro Burnout Zone experience. Visit the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win. All right, we shift our focus to baseball and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Joining us now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line for the first time in 2019, D-backs broadcaster Mike Farron, our guest. Mike, how are you?
How are you?
I'm good. Are you were breaking up a little bit. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, there we go. Nice. I got you now. I assume...
I have the worst cell phone in the world. I just want to point that out, that regardless of where I am, doesn't matter. I could be literally sitting on top of a cell phone tower and it would destroy it.
I wouldn't advise that.
I would assume that you're among the people that's most jacked up when spring training rolls around. Just due to your nature, your love of the sport of baseball. I mean, you got to be pretty excited right now, right?
Yeah. I'd love it a lot more from the more national perspective if, like, all of the players were signed.
That would be good.
It's great. It's back, or closer to being back. I mean, I think every team has had pitchers and catchers report with the exception of one, and Atlanta will have them report tomorrow, and it was great being out at Salt River yesterday morning and seeing guys throw side sessions and hearing the pop of the mitt and listening to Orlando Hudson from six fields away yell at guys. So, like, all of that was awesome. So, I'm happy that we are getting closer and closer to being able to talk about what's going on the field again.
Mike, when you look at this Diamondbacks team losing the three main pieces that they lost, heading into this season, what specifically are you most excited about?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. On the major league side, I'm excited about seeing what Carson Kelly gets with an opportunity. You know, this was a guy who was a very well regarded prospect, in the St. Louis Cardinals system, and really had not gotten an opportunity because they have a future Hall of Famer in Yadier Molina there. So I'm excited to see what Carson Kelly can do. I think if you spend 5 minutes around Carson Kelly, you'll want to be all in on Carson Kelly. I mean, he's a really, really engaging, intelligent young man. You get the sense that he has a work ethic where he really wants to be good. And I think he's a guy that really, he's got a chance to be a pretty, pretty solid major league catcher. And I think the other thing that I'm excited to see, and I think it's one of the big question marks that the Diamondbacks have, is how does Ketel Marte handle center field? Mm-hmm. I was talking to some guys around there yesterday, and listen, you're hard pressed to find a better athlete in any organization, let alone just the D-backs, than Marte, but that's a pretty big change, and he's got a little bit of experience playing with the Mariners in the big league some, and in the minor leagues, both with the Diamondbacks and the Mariners, but it's not a whole lot of experience, and he certainly doesn't lack for confidence, so I'm really curious to see how that plays out. In fact, that's probably the one thing in spring training that I am most interested in seeing, is how he handles that position defensively.
Mike Farron, Diamondbacks broadcaster, our guest here on Bickley and Marotta. Going back to the catching position for a second, Mike, we know what the Diamondbacks and their philosophy is on catchers. They've had three the last few years, and they seemingly had their three with Vila, Murphy, and Kelly, but they go out late in the process and get Caleb Joseph. What do you make of that four-catcher rotation right now, and should we read anything major into that Joseph acquisition?
I wouldn't, and the major reason why is because he still has options left, so he can be sent to the minor leagues, but I'm a very difficult person to talk to Caleb Joseph about, because my first year doing minor league baseball in Bowie was also his first year in Double A, and he's like an all-time great dude. So I am pulling for him to make the team for sure. But I think it's more about having depth, being able to have another option. His contract, I think that you and Zach Buchanan had this the other day, is kind of a split contract, based on what his salary would be if he goes to Reno. I wouldn't put much into it. I think they're trying to build in insurance in case Kelly has a rough spring and they feel like he would be best served by going back to Reno, or if there's, you know, if something else happens, or if Joseph comes in and, you know, at one point he was a fairly good offensive prospect, although he hasn't had very good numbers in the minor leagues, or in the major leagues, excuse me, you know, and they feel like that there's more there offensively and they might be able to make a change in one of the catcher spots. But I wouldn't read too much into it other than the fact that they just have depth at the position now, so that if there are injuries, or if somebody is, you know, really, really unproductive on especially on the defensive side, that they have someone to go to. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that you have to continue to consider about the Diamondbacks, is that one of the keys the last two seasons has been the way that they've tried to build depth. And it didn't work as well last year because Dyson battled injuries and was coming off, you know, a hernia surgery, and Avila obviously had a tough season, but they're trying to limit the number of negative value players that they have. And so adding somebody like Joseph to the mix gives them a credible extra option if, in fact, something bad happens and, you know, they don't necessarily have somebody that's ready to step in.
Mike, the Taijuan Walker still on the shelf with the Tommy John, Patrick Corbin now in Washington. Luke Weaver comes in. Where do you see him fitting into this rotation?
Yeah, I'm probably like the fourth or fifth spot. I mean, I think, you know, he and Merrill Kelly will likely be the last two guys in that rotation, will be the fourth and fifth. And you know, Weaver's got a pretty good pedigree and was very good as a rookie in 2017 with St. Louis. So, you know, it's mostly fastball changeup guy. He's got a breaking ball. I know that's been a real point of emphasis in the early part of camp, is his curveball. So, you know, we'll see how it goes from there, but I would expect him kind of in that, you know, him to be a guy that's in the rotation until something, you know, unless he something happens where it doesn't seem like he's a long-term rotation fit. I mean, I think he's a guy that I think some of the you know, more interesting or better public-facing statistical analysts view as being a strong candidate for a bounce back this year.
Mike Farron, Diamondbacks broadcaster, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Mike Hazen's gone on record a couple times, as you well know, Mike, in recent days, saying, as far as position players go, we've probably done what we're going to do, yet there's still this, I don't know if it's graduated past speculation, but Adam Jones is a guy that's out there as a veteran. You mentioned Ketel Marte shifting to center, and that's the case right now. Do you think there's value in the Diamondbacks bringing in somebody like an Adam Jones, or are you willing to go all in on the Ketel Marte and center experiment?
I think it's a really good question, Vince, because I think that's the one spot that you feel like there's uncertainty, right? Mm-hmm. And as good as Marte was defensively at second last year, you know, Wilmer Flores' defensive reputation is not as strong, mm-hmm. Although he's, you know, a pretty credible offensive player. So I do think that it's one of those things that you can look at. Now, the problem is that it's been a long time since scouts or metrics have graded Adam Jones out as being a good defensive center fielder. He really has struggled defensively as he's gotten older, and there's not really a spot for somebody like that on the roster if they have to play, you know, solely a corner outfield position. You know, Steven Souza Jr. is going to be in right, and David Peralta is going to be in left, and Adam Jones, I'm sure, would like to get, you know, close to 500 plate appearances if he could. I think there's a lot left in Adam Jones' tank offensively. He's never going to be a guy that walks a whole lot. He's cut his strikeout rate some. He'll hit for power. He is a really, really good guy to have in the clubhouse because he holds teammates accountable. So I think that there's a lot of benefit to having an Adam Jones. If there weren't questions about him being a center fielder, mm-hmm. I think there would be a better chance of him being here. But I think the questions are pretty loud at this point. And really, that's where the Diamondbacks were limited in free agency, is that, like, the only legitimate center fielder that was on the free agent market was A.J. Pollock, and it was just unlikely that A.J. was going to come back. So, you know, nobody's really been trading center fielders this winter. So, you know, unless they are convinced, and I haven't gotten the sense that they are, that Adam Jones can handle a significant number of games in the middle of the outfield, I would say that it's probably unlikely at this point. Mm.
Mike, there was a four-season stretch where Greg Holland was averaging over 40 saves per season. It wasn't that long ago. I know it's a lot of this is going to play out during spring training, but what do you think their ideal situation is in terms of heading into the season? Do they want Holland to be the closer? Do they want Bradley to be ready for that, or even somebody else?
Well, I think you need to stop looking. We need to stop looking at bullpens and in that what we've seen the last 25 or 30 years in terms of the one-inning closers. I mean, I think we need to go back to when Vince and I were youngsters, when the best relievers were getting the biggest outs, right? And so I think they view Archie as being that guy, whether he's actually finishing games or you know, pitching, you know, part of the seventh and then the eighth, or part of the eighth and then the ninth. I think that that's kind of how they view Archie. So I don't know that I necessarily view it much differently than I did last year when Brad Boxberger was in. I mean, Holland has experience in that. Greg doesn't care where he pitches. You know, he's been pretty public about that, he just wants to be able to get big outs for a team. So I don't know that it necessarily matters, and I don't know that it matters, you know, who pitches the eighth, who pitches the ninth, so long as everybody is effective, and who pitches the seventh. So to me, it's not nearly as big a question. I think it's a question that's born more of the baseball that we've watched over the last 20 and 25 years, and not focused on the baseball that we've seen played over the last three or four. And, you know, like, I think even today, David Bell, who's the new manager of the Reds, was asked about Raisel Iglesias, who's been their closer. And his comment was, Iglesias is going to get the biggest outs for us. And so I think as we see this shift away from chasing the save statistic and more about, you know, locking down high leverage spots, I think that that's kind of where the Diamondbacks view the bullpen and how it could evolve.
It's officially baseball season now. We've had Mike Farron on the show.
I was just thinking, it's getting sunnier outside as we talk to him.
It got sunnier during the course of that interview.
Yeah. And his cell phone held up.
Yeah, you insulted your cell phone early, and it responded, Mike. Nice job.
You know, sometimes you just got to really lay the law down with the cell phone. I'm glad the weather now matches my disposition. Sunny and cool.
Very, very nice. Mike, appreciate the time, as always.
All right, guys. Thanks,
Mike Farron, D-backs broadcaster, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline. That's Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Coming up, don't look now, Colin Kaepernick's name is in the headlines again for football reasons. We'll get into that next. It's Bickley Marotta with Luke Lipinski in today from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Friday edition of Bickley and Marotta with Luke Lipinski filling in for Bick, as he has for most of the week. Bick will be back on Tuesday. Again, no show on Monday for the President's Day holiday. So enjoy your long weekend if you're lucky enough to get that granted to you, like we are.
How do you feel about saxophones in music?
Wow, I wasn't prepared for this question.
Why not?
I like to keep things loose and fresh here.
It depends. Speaking of saxophones, I got to say this, and you just jarred my brain on this.
You hit a saxophone nerve.
And getting ready for the show today, Valentine's Day was yesterday. It's a terrible day for everybody. And I can't, I mean.
You said this yesterday.
Like most Americans, I can't stand Kardashians or anything really Kardashian adjacent. But did you see Kim Kardashian West's post on Valentine's Day on Twitter?
No.
It was video, and there's just a room, like it's a giant white room, and there's nothing but like single stem roses all over the room, like an individual vases, I guess.
Yeah.
And in the middle of it is Kenny G playing his saxophone. She's like, no big deal. Kenny G is in my living room. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Well, that's... I don't know how that makes me feel about the Kardashians.
Kanye's out there, but I think he won Valentine's Day. And I've always said this, too. It's really easy to be romantic and dashing when you have unlimited money.
Mm-hmm.
The people I respect that can do the romance thing on a limited budget, people that deserve your admiration. But still, he's got a lot of money. That's pretty good.
I would think you could get Kenny G on a fairly limited budget. I feel like he went discount. He could have got somebody else.
Kenny G on Valentine's Day is in demand, probably like Flogging Molly on St. Patrick's Day. Like, they don't play the rest of the year, but they get that one gig that kind of funds them for the whole year.
And at least they have to compete with the Dropkick Murphys. Who does Kenny G compete with? Kenny
Warren G.
F? Yes.
Did you see that
Andy the G.
Andy the G. Weird Al Yankovic posted on Twitter a picture of him superimposed over Kenny G with his accordion in front of the flower room.
I did not.
That got even more disturbing. I didn't think that was possible. Has there been saxophone in a song since like 1988 other than
the one? The rejoin.
Yeah, that was Beck, right? Was that Beck?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the only song with a saxophone in it since like 1988 that wasn't saxophone music. You know what I mean?
Oh, there's got to be something.
Springsteen
right?
still plays.
Yeah, but he's not writing new saxophone songs, is he?
Saxophone did peak in the 50s, I will give you that.
50s, I would say like early 80s, 70s.
What's the best saxophone work in a pop song?
Again, I was not prepared for this.
Neither was I.
10th Avenue Freeze Out by Springsteen and the E Street Band. Do you remember for some reason, there was in the mid-90s, late 90s, swing music and ska music became very popular for about 6 months?
Yeah.
There was a ton of horn music in that.
That's true. All right, here's my nominee.
Wait, let me get some Kingsbury sound.
Yeah, we need to play this.
Just you want to meet as many as you can. I think a guy coming from the college ranks who my network isn't as big in the NFL as it.
Doesn't work the same.
No, we need a different voice for the who is that? George Michael? Is that what that is?
Yeah. It's Wham.
Wasn't that somebody's batting music? On the eight, Josh Reddick. Wasn't that Josh Reddick's batting
music? It is George Michael's solo. You're right. Not Wham. I apologize.
You should, although I only knew that because I looked at your screen.
All right. This little tangent was brought to you by absolutely nobody.
and the Saxophone Society of America.
Yes.
This is the most play they've gotten on the air in a while.
News broke yesterday. The Alliance of American Football is going into week two. Hot shots are on the road.
Are they
going
to break that news each week? Week three coming up.
No, but there was breaking news about the league. Word leaked out that, according to Bill Polian, CEO Charlie Ebersol of the AAF reached out to Colin Kaepernick to gauge his interest in playing in the league. It is interesting to note that all players in the Alliance of American Football, regardless of their status or what they had accomplished in the NFL, 3-year contracts, $250,000 non-guaranteed. So engaging the interest Colin Kaepernick had of playing football for the first time in 2016, he apparently demanded $20 million or more to play in this league, which is just ridiculous.
It is until you see what Kirk Cousins is making.
But Kirk Cousins is a major league quarterback.
Yes, and he's in the NFL.
Yes.
Shot, everybody.
I think Colin Kaepernick did several shots before he made that demand.
I feel like on some level that maybe answers the question of how much, you know, every time there's an injury in the NFL, people are like, why isn't Colin Kaepernick getting a look? And then you kind of have the question of, does Colin Kaepernick even really still want to play football at this point?
Yeah, I mean, that question has loomed for a while, and I think this is a definitive, one of the criticisms was, all right, if he wants to get back in the league, he has to do whatever it takes. And normally when you have that discussion about specifically a quarterback, the circumstances are different. Maybe it was a guy who was a high draft pick who kind of flamed out production-wise in the league. Tim Tebow was also in the story. They reached out to him. He declined because he's still pursuing his baseball career. But there was a time where people said, well, if Tim Tebow wants to be a quarterback so bad, because remember, he kept saying, I'm not giving up on my dream of being a quarterback. Will you play in the Arena League? No. Will you go play in Canada? No. Well, then you're not willing to do whatever it takes to be in the league.
Yeah.
It's a different conversation with Kaepernick, who we can all admit was not the same quarterback at the end of his career.
No, it wasn't good.
Than he was at his height. Almost won a Super Bowl. I mean, the numbers weren't horrible. But this, again, to answer your question, does he even really want to play? This would indicate that he's not all that big on playing anymore.
And like
to make a demand that outrageous.
That's the thing. It would have been like if you talked to me on Monday, you're like, hey, Bickley's out. You want to come in and fill in tomorrow? And I was like, yeah, for $10 million, Vince. You would have been like, I don't know that Luke really wants to come in tomorrow. I mean, it's not like Kaepernick is constantly saying, I want to get back into football.
You're asking for Gambo money to do one?
Almost. Yeah, almost Gambo money. I don't want to be, unrealistic here.
Joe Gambadoro.
I don't know the ins and outs of the AAF, but you asked the question off the air before the show started. One of you, I don't remember. It was either you or Jarrett. You guys have all blurred together at this point. Well, how much value would he have to the AAF? Like, I wonder if he had gone to them and said, yeah, But I also know I'm going to be the headliner in your league by far. I want $1.5 million to play if they could have made that happen.
Yeah, I wonder where the money line would have been.
It was somewhere between $20 million and $250,000.
But I don't know if there's any wiggle room off that line for anybody.
And that's what I'm saying.
And that's one of the reasons I think this league will work, is because it's pretty clear it's not the USFL.
Yeah.
They're not going to go after the Herschel Walkers and try to outpay the NFL to get star talent. So to answer the question, what would the value be? I think it would, for a number of reasons, the financial aspect of it, had the AAF said, yeah, we want this guy in our league, here's the blank check, I think it would have been more damaging to the league, especially in the first year.
For $20 million. But I'm saying, like, if it was just a million.
I think if they make an exception for Colin Kaepernick or any player, they're going down the wrong road. From a financial standpoint.
Why?
Then there's the whole public relations.
Well, yeah, and it could be more of a negative than a positive, but I still feel like they need the publicity more than the NFL does. Like, the whole no publicity is bad publicity, that doesn't apply when you're as established and dominant as the NFL is. But if you're a fledgling league and you can get Colin Kaepernick, you're going to take a hit, certainly, but you're also going to get a lot more notoriety. I mean, worst case, couldn't they structure their contracts into like three tiers of like the $250,000 guys, the $500,000, and the million guys?
They could, but maybe that's down the road. Let me ask, how much AAF did you watch last week?
Just a little bit of the Hot Shots game.
Okay. Would you be more apt to watch a game between two non-Hot Shots franchises if Colin Kaepernick was playing quarterback?
I wouldn't like watch every one of their games, but I would
definitely watch the first one.
I'd be interested to see what he has left. Mm. I mean, he's not old. He just hasn't played football in a while.
Who do you think would be a bigger draw, him or Tebow?
Mm. That's an interesting question, because I know...
All things considered, I would say Kaepernick.
See, I wonder if people are caught up in his cause and everything. I get that, but I wonder how much they would really want to watch him play football. I think his biggest fans now aren't necessarily football fans or care that they watch him play football. Like, they care that he gets to play football, but I don't know that they would be tuning in to watch the Salt Lake Stallions. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Look at that. See, I'm on my way. I don't know that they'd tune in and watch all of his games.
Did you do the Trivia Tuesday quiz on ArizonaSports.com this week?
No, I usually do.
It was all about, you should do it during the commercial.
I'll do it right now.
I want to see how you do.
Okay.
It's all about team names from non-NFL leagues.
Oof. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll do it during the break. Can we go to break so I can do this?
Yes. Burns and Gamble will be broadcasting live starting at 2 p.m. from GCU to get the Lopes pumped up for their first baseball game in the newly renovated Brazel Field. Head to the events page at ArizonaSports.com for complete details. Coming up, March Madness not far away. Might we in the state of Arizona be experiencing an NCAA tournament with no representatives from the Grand Canyon State at all? It's a sad possibility. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata with Luke Lipinski in today, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
No question they should be worried. They're not an at-large bid team right now, despite the fact that they had clearly the best non-conference for the second consecutive year, mind you, the best non-conference of any Pac-12 team with their two quad one wins. Mississippi State is still a top 25 team. And Kansas at home. But to build a resume, it isn't just about your quality wins. I would start there, okay? But then you have to go down to avoiding bad losses.
That is the voice of Casey Jacobson, college basketball analyst with Burns and Gambo. Does work for Fox, does work for the Pac-12 Network, talking about whether or not ASU should be scared of not making the NCAA tournament. And pretty clear case right there, especially after the loss on Wednesday night. The Sun Devils suffered in Boulder to Colorado. That wasn't all that Casey Jacobson said in that interview, Luke. And I'll put that on hold for a second because I do have to update.
Okay.
During the commercial break, you tried the quiz that I just just recommended to you.
Yeah, I hated that.
And you went all Anthony Davis on it.
Yeah, I quit.
You quit. You left early.
My arm hurts. So.
My arm!
Yeah.
It's broken.
Rich Paul's going to come pick me up, so I don't have to do this anymore.
I can't believe that was the first time we got into my arm, it's broken one. That's how you know Bickley's not here.
Yeah. He says it three times a show.
It's
probably saying it right now.
Even when
this was the first time it actually was relevant.
He's at Disney World for a week with his family. That includes a lot of reaching into the wallet. I'm sure he said, "My arm, it's broken more than once." Here was Casey Jacobson, a discussion we've had about whether or not the Pac-12 is more than a one-bid league. Casey Jacobson pretty dead set on the fact that it's not.
Yes, which would be the first time in the history of college basketball power conferences that any power conference would have only one team in it. In fact, the all-time low is two, and the Pac-12 is the only power conference team that has done that, and they've done it four times, which isn't a good look for the Pac-12. But that's just the reality of it. The Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, the SEC have never put in less than three teams.
Oh, that's just such a bleak picture.
Can you get relegated down to a mid-major status? Is that possible? Are we close to that?
Maybe.
What, first of all, I'll make the bet with Casey Jacobson that you and I kind of made, but we never really set stakes. They're getting more than one team this year. I'll make them.
I'll make that bet with you.
We can't bet Jarrett's shirt. We got to bet something.
Well,
good.
I think we have to wait to finalize until what we see transpires. Because right now, as we speak, it's a one-bid league.
I still think they'll get two.
If somebody other than Washington, if Washington plays well the rest of the way and has one or two conference losses, doesn't win the Pac-12 tournament, I can make an argument.
If
another team wins it.
We can't wait till after Selection Sunday to decide if they're going to be more than one team. This is the bet right now.
All right, I'll bet you right now.
All right, they're getting more than one.
They're not getting more than one.
Over, under 1.5 Pac-12 teams in the NCAA tournament.
And I'm taking the under.
I will take the
under. Now, do you think that's just because it's Washington and that's it? Do you think Washington can't get in if they don't win the tournament?
I'm not sure about their status either. It's not like they're ranked. I'm going to pull up their schedule right now, and you tell me where the good wins are on Washington's schedule, because I don't see them anywhere.
A lot of the basis for my argument is it's a bad look for the NCAA, even though it's one of the few things that isn't actually their fault, if only one team gets in from the Pac-12. Like, I think they're going to do everything they can to at least get a second team in. Now, if all these teams just continue to be extremely mediocre and they don't have a choice, then I guess I'll lose the bet. But I think if it comes down to a tiebreaker between ASU and whoever else from some other conference, Seton Hall, let's say, and they have to get, and ASU would only be the second team from the Pac-12. I know they say that stuff doesn't matter, but we all know it does.
Here's Washington's wins non-conference, okay? Western Kentucky,
ooh,
San Diego, Santa Clara, Texas A&M, Eastern Washington, Santa Barbara, Seattle, Sacramento State, and Fullerton.
Well, they really never left the Northwest.
The non-conference losses that they had, because they had opportunities to play good teams, they lost all of them. They lost at number 11 Auburn at the time. I'm sorry, they didn't even beat Minnesota. They lost to Minnesota at home. They lost at Gonzaga by two, which might be their best performance of the year. And they lost to Virginia Tech, who at the time was ranked 13th.
Yeah, but quality loss. Isn't that how U of A got in over ASU the one year when ASU was much more? That was what everybody clinged to. Sure, U of A had been beaten by ASU head-to-head and had a worse record, but they had quality losses.
I don't know. I mean, taking it away from the Pac-12 and just center on the state of Arizona, ASU, I think there were people that thought going into this year that ASU, U of A, and GCU really had good chances to make the Pac-12 tournament.
I will not take the over-under on 1.5
ASU,
Arizona colleges.
Casey Jacobson says they're not even a bubble team right now. Arizona's not going unless they win the Pac-12 tournament. They've lost six in a row. And GCU has hit the skids at a really bad time. Now, we know the reality of GCU is it doesn't matter what you do now. If they get hot for 3 days in Vegas and win the WAC tournament, they're going to the tournament. But you can't feel great about that prospect either because, A, they haven't been able to get over the New Mexico State hump on a regular basis, and, B, they're playing their worst basketball of the year.
Yeah, but this would be kind of fitting payback. All the years that they've – not all the years. They've only been a program at this level for a couple of years. But they've been really good during the regular season and then lose to New Mexico State in the conference tournament.
Well, last year was the first time they were even eligible for the conference tournament.
So it would be kind of fitting if coming back around this way where they're just like, eh, okay this year, but then they go on a run and win the conference.
Just think of the local interest in the NIT this year, though.
Oh, it's going to be huge. Is U of A an NIT team at least, Jarrett?
I don't know. Because they are pathetic and an embarrassment right now.
They would turn it down.
You have to be above 500
to
make the NIT, and I don't know that they could do that.
I did not get any angry Arizona basketball text from you last night. Is that because you didn't partake and you were into the Valentine's Day
festivities? I was, actually. I did watch the second half, and I got very, very, very angry, but my phone was actually exploding at the time, so I couldn't text anybody.
What is the most vulgar thing you said during...
No.
Just quietly enunciate.
Let me quote my friend Paul Bissonnette question.
They have ASU. Jay Billis has ASU still in on his list of...
Joe Lunardi has ASU as one of the first four teams. Or last four, whatever they call them.
Yeah, last.
Well, playing those games, the 5-12 games or whatever they are in Dayton. Yep. Or the 12-12 game.
Billis has them in tier five, scratching for at-large berths. He has them, I guess he ranked 68 teams.
I know earlier in the show, I said we're going to have Bobby Hurley on, and it's not going to work out today, unfortunately, because they are on the road getting ready for that Utah game. But I that's one of the things that I would love to hear from Bobby Hurley is two straight years of this non-conference success against good teams. And then why the struggles? Is the Pac-12 as bad as everybody says it is because they just beat each other up?
See, last year, I really bought into that of I thought people went too far, and it was just once a few people say it, then everybody's like, oh, yeah, the Pac-12 is terrible. This is the worst ever. I really felt like last year there were some good teams, nobody great, but just good teams that were beating each other up. Man, you watch it this year. It doesn't add up that ASU can beat Kansas, but then can't beat Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't add up.
Yeah, so big one for the Sun Devils tomorrow night in Salt Lake against Utah. Coming up next, Cliff Kingsbury visited the studios of Arizona Sports earlier today with Doug and Wolf, part of Newsmakers Week. We'll get you caught up to date on everything the first-year Cardinals head coach said. It's Bickley and Murata, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM. It's not deep enough. I shouldn't even try. Arizona Sports Station.